be worth to your soul? What is he worth to you? What is he worth to you? What is he worth to your soul? He died on the cruel tree for you and for me. What is he worth to your soul?
Sunshine and gloom shall, when they reach the bright goal, ceasing to roam, be forever at home.
What is he worth to your soul? What is he worth to you? Is he worth to your soul? He died on the cruel tree for you and for me. What is he worth to your soul?
Welcome to another Bible study brought to you by the Hamlin Church of Christ. In Ephesians 1, verse 18, the eyes of your understanding being enlightened, that you may know what is the hope of his calling, and what the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints. Here he's simply saying that we need to be able to understand. We need to be able to have the eyes of our understanding enlightened so we can know what the Christian hope is and what the Christian inheritance is. When we know these things, then we have more incentive to want to serve God, to want to live the right kind of a life. And we can only know this through a study of the Word of God. Join us today in our study from the Bible.
Many days begin with sunshine, skies are clear and also blue. Then the dark clouds gather around us, hiding sun and sky from view. If we start to sing of glory, lift our voices in his praise. He has promised strength to lift us up, spirits of our heart to raise. All our dark clouds will shine, when his dawn brings us all. When our day has got us farther, and the rain is seen to be careful. We just smile and the burning storm. Let your glory shine its rays. Call the dark clouds and we soon have silver linings every day. Does your heart at times seem broken? From your eyes the tears do flow. Do the ones you count as true friends seem to vanish like the snow? Just remember there is someone up in heaven looking down. He will never leave, never will deceive, and for you he has a crown. All our dark clouds will be shining when he's gone within your soul. When our day has gone as father, and the grace we can go on, we just smile and our singing. Let your voice receive his grace. Draw the dark clouds and the sun up, silver linings every day.
Our study continues in the 13th chapter of John. We only have 3 verses left in this chapter. We're beginning at the 36th verse. Jesus had just given some very great teaching here to his disciples immediately after having the Lord's Supper and the Passover Supper with them on the very night that he's betrayed. Judas has just left the group to go and actually go through with the betrayal. And so in verse 34, he gives some very great teaching here for the kingdom, a teaching that will be the very hallmark for those that would follow after him later. He says, "A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another, as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." Now, beginning in verse 36, which is where our lesson begins at this time, "Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, whither goest thou?" Now, this question that Peter is asking refers back to a statement that Jesus had just made in the 33rd verse. There Jesus says, "My little children, yet a little while I am with you. Ye shall seek me, and as I said unto the Jews, whither I go ye cannot come, so now I say to you." So Jesus made a statement to them about the fact that he was going to shortly leave them, and where he was going they would not be able to come with him. And so even though he's just given us a very great teaching about love, a very plain, open, straightforward command to them, it seems that Peter's interest is more centered upon those things that are more obscure, those things that do not have as plain of a meaning as the command he gave about love. And of course, that follows with our human nature even today. We like to dwell on the things that are really not to be revealed to us. We like to speculate. We like to maybe quibble back and forth and even argue about those things. But many times we overlook the things that are so very plain and obvious and are so needed for us. The subject of love is one that is given to us and is so plain to us that we should practice it. It is a command for us, and yet we may like to overlook it to look at other things. That seems to be what Peter's doing here. He refers back to this statement about the fact that the Lord's going to leave them, and so he asks the question, "Lord, whither goest thou?" Just where are you going to go? What are you going to be doing that we can't come with you? And so Jesus answered him, "Whither I go, thou canst not follow me now, but thou shalt follow me afterwards." So he doesn't give him real plain answers to where he's going, but he does re-emphasize the fact that Peter will not be able to go with him. He'll not be able to follow him now. Now, this could be that he's talking about going to the cross, the fact that he's going to shortly be put to death. This is the very night that he's going to be arrested and tried. And within the 24-hour period now, he's going to be put on that cross and actually put to death. And so he may be telling Peter that you can't come with me to the cross. You, because of your frailty, because of your weakness of character in that you are actually going to deny me, will not be able to follow me to the cross. You're not up to that now. This is not something you're going to be able to do. And he does say then that thou shalt follow me afterwards. And of course, according to tradition, Peter was actually crucified. Now, that may be what he's talking about, but it's more than likely he's not talking about following him to the cross, but he's talking about following him to the crown. He's talking about his death. He's talking about the fact that he's going to leave this life and that Peter will not be able to do that now. There was other work for Peter to be doing before he would die. Peter had a lot to do to fulfill his ministry here upon this earth. Jesus had about come to the end of his time, but not so for Peter. And Peter also had yet to learn the difficulty involved in following the Lord. There would be many, many trials yet he would have to go through with before he would reach the point of being able to actually go where the Lord would be after death. And so, verse 37, "Peter said unto him, Lord, why cannot I follow thee now? I will lay down my life for thy sake." So Peter doesn't want to be put off. He doesn't want to be made to think that he has a weakness along this line, that he is not going to be able to follow the Lord right to the very death. He says, "Why, I'll lay down my life for thy sake. If it's a matter of dying, I can die right along with you. If it's a matter of having ourselves threatened to the point of death, that doesn't bother me. I'm ready to do that. I want to follow thee now." He also implies here that it's better to die with Jesus than to live without him. And so he wants to stay with him, and he lets this desire be known to Jesus. I don't want to be separated from you. I don't want to depart from you. I don't know anything that could come that would separate us. And so Jesus answers in verse 38, Jesus answered him, "Wilt thou lay down thy life for my sake?" Jesus may have been saying this in a kind of a taunting manner, because he is really going to tell Peter here that you in no wise are going to be able to live up to this statement that you are ready to die with me. For he says, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee, the cock shall not crow till thou hast denied me thrice." So he's telling Peter very plainly that you have a weakness. You have a flaw. You are going to deny me three times tonight before the cock crows. Now, Mark talks about the cock crowing twice. And so that's understood to be the first crowing of the cock, which would be at 12 midnight. And then the second crowing of the cock would be about 3 in the morning, which is shortly before sunrise. And so Jesus only mentions the one crowing of the cock. In other words, before this night is finished, before the sun comes up, you will have denied me 3 times. And certainly we're going to see that that did happen. This was a true prediction that Jesus made about Peter. Peter had a weakness here, and he is told about it before it even happens. And one of the reasons he may have been told about it is that whenever this cock did crow, that this was an immediate reminder to Peter as to what he'd done. He immediately realized that he had certainly sinned. He had certainly denied his Lord. He had certainly fallen to weakness and fear. And so he immediately was penitent of what he'd done. He was very sorrowful. And the very fact that Jesus told him it would happen, and then whenever it did happen, it made it very plain to his mind that he'd done the very thing that the Lord had predicted that he would do, and it was certainly something to his shame and disgrace. Now we're going to learn, as we study through the Bible, that Peter did overcome this. He was sorrowful for it. He repented of it. But shortly after this, Peter came back as one of the four runners in the establishment of the kingdom. He was the one that gave the first gospel message in the book of Acts in chapter 2, after the kingdom was established. And he very sternly and strongly accused those Jews of having put to death the Son of God. And he did this on numerous occasions, as he stood before the council, as he had his very life threatened, and as he had the council to warn him not to speak anymore in this man's name. Peter stood forth and said, "Should we obey men, or should we obey God?" So he overcame this weakness. It was a fault that he had. It was a problem that he had, but he overcame it. And we have to give Peter a lot of credit. We have to regard Peter very highly for having done this. For it's no uncommon thing for a man to have a weakness, for a man to have a failing, but for him to realize what it is and to overcome it so that he then lets it not be a hindrance to him anymore, that's what Peter did. And so Peter stands out then as one of the very great of the followers of the Lord. We have his works that do follow him. We have the writings of 1st and 2nd Peter, which are most important to us. We have many of his actions that were done, which are recorded in the book of Acts, that are most important to us. And so, although Peter had this weakness, he did overcome it, and we have to give him high honor for having done so. And with this 38th verse, we bring to a close the 13th chapter of John. We're now ready to begin the 14th chapter. And in this 14th chapter, he is continuing his talk with these 11 disciples, which he begun shortly after completing the Passover feast with them and initiating the institution of the Lord's Supper. This is the very same night that he is betrayed and tried. This is the very same night that he goes out into the garden and prays. But as he talks to them, he's now giving them a caution against trouble of heart. He says in the first verse, "Let not your heart be troubled." Now, he knew that at this time they had a very great cause for trouble. And when we speak of trouble here, we're talking about a trouble that would cause someone to lose their faith, to cause someone to decide that this was not the path they should be following. And now as his ministry was about to come to a conclusion, as he was about to actually lay down his life for the sins of mankind, there were many causes for trouble coming up. First of all, they had just seen Judas's betrayal. Judas had now left their number. He was no longer with them. He'd gone out to do his bad deed. And so his very absence was a very loud testimony of the fact that there was some kind of trouble brewing. Judas had betrayed them. Then Jesus is also speaking about his departure, that he's going to leave them and they're not going to be able to follow him. And so they hear this adds to the atmosphere of fear and uncertainty and grief, and it's another cause for trouble. And then Jesus had just told Peter about the fact that he's going to deny him. He's going to deny him three times before the cock shall crow. And so if Judas has done what he's done and Peter is going to be denying them, what about the rest? Maybe they won't be able to withstand the trials and the temptations. Maybe they also are going to turn. Is this whole thing going to just completely be demolished now, this group, this comradeship, this beginning of the kingdom, this nucleus of the church here? Is it going to be destroyed? So a lot of causes for trouble, and so they can see that there are some very great changes brewing now. They're going to shortly be without the Master. He's no longer to be in their presence. Some of them are going to betray him or deny him. And so here is a fear of the unknown. And we see today that as we walk the Christian walk, as we walk in the very similar steps to these early apostles, that we also have on every hand great causes for trouble. We can have things that can come up to cause us to lose our faith, or to cause us to be greatly shaken in our faith, or to be weakened. And so we have to be on the lookout for these things. And regardless of what our trials may be, we see, though, that we would seldom ever have a time when we would have the great concern that these apostles would have here, the uncertainty that they had at this very time, the great load that had been put upon their shoulders to carry on after the Savior leaves. And so Jesus cautions them against this trouble. Let not your heart be troubled. And as we look at this statement, we'd like to examine it a little bit more closely. Your heart, when he says your, he's talking about these people who were his followers. They were the ones who were not to be troubled. He does not say that sinners should not be troubled. Let the sinner be troubled. He didn't say that the sinner should be relaxed and have his ease and depend upon God to give him strength and energy and protection and security. He didn't say that to the sinner. He's saying that to his disciples. Your heart is the one that he's talking about here. And of course, if we're his disciples today, that same injunction, that same sense of comfort applies to us. It's our heart that's going to be comforted, not those round about us, not those who are unfaithful to God. Only the faithful to God have this comforting thought given to them. That's the one that Jesus is talking to today, the faithful one, when he says, let not your heart be troubled. So we know then that the way of the transgressor is hard. We know then that the wages of sin is death. And as we see others having to pay great prices for their sins and for their disobedience, for their failure to believe, then let's not let that bother us and our own security, because we have a security that they also could have if they would be faithful and obedient to God. Now he says, let not your heart be troubled. Your heart here is what he's talking about not being troubled. This is that part of us that is the mind or the soul. We are to keep our heart. As long as we can keep our heart or our mind in a state of not being troubled, our mind in a state in which it truly is aware of the great benefits of God, it has a perspective on what is going on. It knows what the will of God is. We know what we're doing, and we know why we're doing it. We're not being blindly led by something that's going to collapse on us all of a sudden. We know the true nature of the kingdom. The heart, then, is the part that we not have troubled. We may suffer other miseries of the body. We may suffer physical disabilities. We may suffer from weaknesses. We may also suffer from mental setbacks. We may have times of depression. We may have times of grief. We're supposed to have those times. But so far as the mind itself losing its composure, losing its ability to truly see and to know what God would have us to do, we don't have that happen to us. We keep our heart. We keep our soul. And so that's what he's talking about here when he says, let not your heart be troubled. And then he uses the word troubled. This word really means to be made to be in a hurry or to be confused, to be ruffled, to be cast down, to be decomposed, to be disquieted. That's what we do not want to have happen to our heart. We keep our composure. We keep our sense of balance. We keep our sense of what is right and what's wrong. We do not lose our fidelity to God. Now, in 1 Peter 3:14, Peter uses the same word there where he says, "But if you suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are ye, and be not afraid of their terror, neither be ye troubled." That word trouble there is the same word that Jesus uses here. And what Peter is saying in that passage is that we're not to allow these gods that are false gods, these idolatrous gods, these gods that other people have chosen to take and to follow and to obey, we're not to let them cause us to be troubled. We're not to let them to cause us to lose our faith. We're not to let them cause us to have a question about this true and living God. And so we're not to be troubled in that sense. The trouble that would cause you to lose your faith, that's the trouble we're not supposed to have. Now, this doesn't mean that we don't have some concern. This doesn't mean that we do not give diligence regarding our salvation. We have other scriptures that teach very plainly along that line. In Philippians 2, verse 12, Paul says, "Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." So we're to use fear, that is, awe and respect for God. We're to use humility and the timorous attitude of being one who could be lost as we work out our own salvation. We're to work it out. That is, we're to work it through. It's a continual working on our part. We're to give some concern about it. Also in 2 Timothy 2:15, Paul there tells Timothy, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." And that word study means to give diligence, to make haste, to really apply yourself to this task of assuring thyself to be approved unto God. We want to be approved unto God, so we're concerned about that. We give a lot of energy to that. We do not just take that lightly and trust our chances to, as whether or not we're right or wrong, to maybe what we would call luck. We are very diligent there. But so far as being troubled by these events, to the point that we're going to be made to lose our soul, to lose our faith, to lose our obedience to God, that's what Jesus is cautioning against here. So let not your heart be troubled, he says. And then he gives the remedy for this. He says, "You believe in God, believe also in me." Now this statement is taken two ways. First of all, it's taken as a double exhortation. It's taken from the standpoint of he's telling them to believe in God. If you want a remedy for trouble, if you want to be able to avoid this trouble that I'm telling you that I don't want you to have, if you want to be able to avoid this situation in which you are going to be made to be confused and to be decomposed, to be mentally in a state of chaos, if you want to avoid that, believe in God. Believe in God, and believe also in me. This is your way out of this difficulty. This is the way to extricate yourself from the cares and trials that the world has to go through with that you can avoid. Believe in God, and believe also in me. Because God has the answer. And it, of course, as you believe in God, then you must believe in me because I'm his son. I am the representative that he sent here on this earth your mediator between you and this God. Believe also in me. And so he's telling them that this is the answer, the belief in God and the belief in me. But he may also be simply saying here that since you've already believed in God, he says you believe in God. That's one way to translate it. It doesn't have to be translated that way, but you believe in God, Then he says, believe also in me. So he may be telling them that since you already have this great belief in God, you already know the true and living God, you've been taught that from your infancy on up, you know the great scriptures, you know the truth is given by the prophets, then also believe in me. Accept me on the same plane that you do God, because I am equal with God. I am to take the same honor that God has. I now have the same power that God has. I have the power to resurrect the dead. I have the power to give life. I have the power to execute judgment upon those when they are resurrected. God has vested me with this power. He no longer gives judgment. He no longer uses his power to give life. That's been put into me. I'm the one who has that power. And so you believe in God, believe also in me. That's the answer to your difficulties. That's the way you're going to be taken out of this state of chaos and confusion. That's where you're going to get through these difficult times that are coming up now. When you lose your belief in me, or you lose your belief in God, you'll not get through. You're going to fall aside. You're going to be as one that has been to give up his faith. You're going to lose all. But to keep all, to get the benefit of the work you've already done and the future work, you have to believe in me and believe in God. And, of course, that's a very good and needed and necessary instruction for us today. We must believe in God and believe also in Jesus. Way out of our difficulties. That is the way to let not your heart be troubled. That is the way to have a mind that is going to be sound and stable and secure in these chaotic times. Well, we've come to the end of our time for this portion of our lesson, so we must close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
Calls me home, never more to roam. I'll be ready then to go with him. Naught have I to fear with my Savior near. I'll be ready then to go with him. Night will fall, I'll hear his call. Then I'll say goodbye, all world of sin. I will take my place with the saved by grace. I'll be ready then to go with him. When my work is done at the setting sun, I'll be ready then to go with him. To that home on high, way up in the sky, I'll be ready then to go with him. Shades of night will fall, I will hear his call. Say goodbye, O world of sin. I will take my place with the saved by grace. I'll be ready then to go with him. Past the pearly gate where my loved ones wait. I'll be ready then to go with him. All through glory land with that happy band. I'll be ready then to go with him. Night will fall, I will hear his call. Then I'll say goodbye, O world of sin. I will take my place with the saved by grace. I'll be ready then to go with him. I'll be ready then to go with him.